And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 214. Today is a 7 questions episode, and I interview the star of the new film Colorblind, Chantel Riley. Welcome, everybody, to Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. Today, I interview the star of the new film Colorblind, Chantel Williams. Chantel is a wonderful actress out of Canada. She joined me on the show to answer the 7 questions and to promote her new movie, Colorblind, Canadian film, where I discovered racism is also in Canada. Who knew? I thought it was just a U.S. export. We just perfect it, I think. Colorblind, let me read the description they sent over. The emotionally captivating feature Colorblind follows the story of Magdalene, a colorblind Black artist, and her son, Monet, as they move into the new neighborhood where they are challenged when they see the true color of people. Colorblind, get it? Okay. When their racist landlord, Walton, is forced to babysit due to an unexpected emergency, he discovers a more colorful world through the child's black and white perspective. Colorblind takes the audience through a heart-wrenching journey of the complexities of race and social justice, seeing it through the lens of a colorblind mother and son. Colorblind stars Chantel Riley, which you may have seen in Frankie Drake Mysteries or Wynonna Earp, Trey Meridati, which you might have seen in Batwoman, and Gary Shock, Cold Squad, Day of the Dead, and a host of others. The film is proudly comprised of a majority BIPOC crew, which is nice. It's written and directed and produced by Mostafa Keshvari. It's a film. I did enjoy watching it. I think it brought up some great concepts. I like the premise there. Some special effects in it. You know me when you see the film. When we talk about those, by policy, I don't really do reviews on films that I interview the people because that can be really awkward, right? But I do got to say, I really enjoyed Chantel's performance in this and made me really want to interview her. So I got to do that via Zoom. She was out in Toronto on set for another movie. So who knows? She could be blowing up, but you heard her here first on Black and a Half. So. Yeah, I'm going to have that interview just in a moment. She does the world famous 7 questions, and we find out about her background and how she got to where she is. Big shout out first to our Patreon subscribers. If you want to help out, make sure this genius podcast keeps going, please consider becoming a Patreon member by supporting the show for as little as $1 a month. Just go to patreon.com/blackandahalf. And for as little as $1 a month, you can become a member of the League of Extraordinary Listeners. And for just a little bit more, you can become an Inner Circle member like Keith Nagel, Stefan Ward, Tara Wiedner, always, every single time. You can, and also by supporting this podcast, you support all other podcasts that I do, by the way. You can support the you're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein, where this is actually going to be airing as well. So if you listen to that one, you may have already, you'll hear this one too at the same time. And you also support my other podcast. Well, that other podcast, the third one, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein, sort of sponsors all of these in a way, but wouldn't have happened without this one, oddly, right? So that's weird. But if you are interested in buying a home or know someone who is, you can send them over to yourbuyingahome.com and they can find out from this podcast and the videos that I put out on real estate all about the process of buying or selling a home. So, and where me, you know, I'm not just a podcaster by day, I'm a podcaster by night, and I'm also a real estate agent by day and weekend. And actually, whenever anyone else wants to see Silas Lindenstein Boutique Brokerage, where I hang my hat, in the Seattle, Washington area. So if you know anybody, send them my way. Regardless, here's a podcast that has nothing to do with real estate. Well, actually, there is a There is a slight connection. That I just thought of that. So it does go. This really works. I this is pure synergy going on. But anyway, Chantel's wonderful. Listen to this interview, enjoy, and thank you for listening to episode number 214, Seven Questions with Chantel Riley. So I was surprised to see the movie in Canada because I thought racism didn't exist there. It's you're such a happy illusion.
Yeah. The ongoing illusion that happens in this country.
Colorblind. How did you run across the film, the project? How did you get involved with it?
Well, just like, you know, your standard audition.
Okay.
Casting call. I had read for the part and didn't hear back for a little bit. So I thought, okay, I guess I didn't get it. And then I got the call that they wanted me to play the lead. So I was really excited to be able to jump in and tell the story.
Are you colorblind yourself? Is that, or did you have to,
No, I'm not colorblind. No.
You know, for the longest time, I actually thought I saw something on TV when I was young that there was a time where I thought they wouldn't put it in a movie or a TV show if it wasn't true. Ooh. Right. And I was something said that women couldn't be colorblind, that genetically was impossible. I was like, really? And I thought that for the longest time. And I even saw it as a plot point in another movie. And I was like, impossible. No, it's so far fetched. How's that? Then I realized I had misread it. It's the odds are lower, apparently.
Yes.
It's much, much lower.
Yes.
Is it was there anything you did to prepare for that? Like an actor?
Definitely did some research into the idea of colorblindness and the type specifically that my character had. She was able to see like pinks and reds, whereas Monet, that played my son, he was only able to see like black, whites, and like grays. And so what was really cool in the movie was you got to see the perspective of both characters. So you'll see like if she's looking up to the sky and such, it'd just be like pinks and maybe like purples. And then when you saw Monet's vision, you would see it in black and white. So they did a really good job of letting the audience in on how these two were living.
I was fascinated. Did you study at all on about being a painter? I mean, I wondered, you don't actually paint during this, right?
No, I don't paint. But I did do some looking into, her favorite artist was, I mean, she named her kid after Monet. So yeah. I looked into that and actually did some painting of my own just to kind of get the idea and the flow of how, she would have done her artistry. So I took some time. I didn't do any lessons. Most of them were usually because I didn't have too much time, but, most of them were like just YouTube videos, lots of great tutorials on YouTube, by the way. You could just learn anything on there. So just sat on there and just looked at a couple and just did some practicing myself just to really deeply connect with her.
Cool. And how have you been acting your whole life? Is this?
No, definitely not my whole life. This was something that kind of just happened for me, to be honest. But I've been in the industry professionally now for 10 years.
10 years. Oh, do you remember your first, not even non-professional, your first performance in front of people?
I used to dance when I was younger. So if we're not doing the dance side,
okay.
Acting was probably in my church play. Right. I had to play Mary in the good old Christmas play. So that was like my first taste of acting in theater.
Were you at a black church?
Yes.
Okay. Because I was like, I want to see. I want to know if you weren't. I want to hear this. Yeah. I want to know how they reacted.
A Caribbean church. Yes. Predominantly black.
Are you from the Caribbean?
Yes. My family is Jamaican.
Oh, okay. My ex-stepfather was Jamaican. So I have three brothers who are half Jamaican, but lived here. So I visited my mother when she was when she first got married down there to Ocho Rios.
Yes, beautiful.
And funnily enough, like I didn't we talked about how a lot of people, especially Americans, go down to Jamaica and they see the resorts and everything, yes, that part of it. But my mother lived there, so, and she lived in the back woods in this little, I won't even call it a cabin because I don't think it had full walls. Like there wasn't plumbing there. And so we talked about, like, I went to the markets with them and, you know, we were there a couple weeks in the back areas.
So you got
and
to experience like the true Jamaica.
Actual Jamaica and the party, the poverty
proper
part
food
of it.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I grew up. Okay. I need to know something. I need to know if this was a Jamaican dish. Or if this is just something, my ex stepfather was a little off, right? And so I've long ago I decided I can't be just blaming Jamaicans in general for these weird things. Did you ever did you ever fry tuna fish from a can, like in a pan?
Yeah.
So is that that's a Jamaican dish?
Yeah, that's a thing that we, definitely.
You put cucumbers? I remember
all the
cucumbers.
Things. Yes.
It's a Jamaican thing. I thought he made it up.
I guess so, because, I mean, we definitely have done it in my household. Sometimes if there's no like saltfish, you just need like a quick dish. You know, you go to your, you know, cabinet. Usually most Jamaican households will have tins of tuna.
So what do you put in your fried?
Tuna and corned beef.
What do you, corned beef, really? So, well, they were they're pescatarian, so I guess I wouldn't have known that part. What do you put in it?
So in our house, they would mostly be like onion, pepper, thyme, not too many other greens, to be honest. It would just be pretty simple.
Okay.
Salt and pepper, onion. Yeah, maybe Scotch bonnet pepper to give a little more spice.
Scotch bonnet pepper? I don't know what that is.
Yeah, so like jalapeno pepper.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it's like a hot bit. It's hot. Yes,
okay.
Scotch bonnet pepper. Very hot.
I always tell people about the dish that had onions and cucumbers and tomatoes in it. And I was like,
I
ate it. I was fine with it.
Tomato.
Like, I didn't know any difference. Right. And then with white rice, we always served it for some reason.
Yes. Or sometimes we would fry dumplings. So so it'd be like a good alternative if we didn't have any saltfish. That was the alternative.
He made four dishes. That was all he ever cooked. Rice and fried tuna. Rice and beans.
Yes. Oh, we say rice and peas.
Rice. Yeah. He said that too. But I was, I really confused people when I would tell people about it. And then there was always this one, he would overcook his fish. Like, it was just all day. I tell people, I've told this on the show before.
Is it like steam fish or escovitch fish?
I'm trying to remember what this was. It wasn't like, no, it was like this, we had this, like, it was like this pan that we plugged in for some reason, and they would always cook fish in it. I don't know why. So I don't even know if they like poached. No, it was inside, but it was like, I don't know if it was poached. I just remember it was really greasy. They would overcook.
Fried it.
And they also, my mother recently made fun of me to my brother. My brother visits and goes back and he's like, "Mom, they put their pizza in the fridge." Like, because they just leave stuff out overnight. They would just leave it out overnight and then cook it the next day and go. And I was like, "What? How did I not die?" And they're like, my mom's like, "I lived in the bush. We don't, like, you don't have a refrigerator sometimes. It's fine. You're okay."
Yeah, sometimes, like, it gets left out. Yeah.
Like, what? And now I would tell people this and they can't believe I'm alive. Okay. So I'm getting educated. Jamaican culture.
There you go.
Man, what dish, do you miss a dish from home? Like when you're...
Whenever I come home, I love Jamaican breakfast. So fried dumpling, fried plantain, ackee and saltfish are like my favorites.
Dumplings. That was the
other one. I don't eat chicken, beef or pork anymore. So it's mostly just fish for me too. So saltfish for sure. Escovitch fish, like those kind of, that side of stuff. So I they actually just made it because I'm in town right now. So they just made it the other day. So I was in heaven.
You're in Jamaica right now?
No, I'm in Toronto. I'm in Toronto.
Oh, okay.
In my parents' house, yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. They moved over. Okay. So I went on a tangent there. The church. Okay. You church play. What was your first non-church play? Was there a first or performance? What do you remember?
So then my first non-church play would have been the beginning of my acting career, which was The Lion King. And I played Nala in The Lion King in Germany.
Okay.
The German production. Yeah. And then after that, I played Nala on Broadway for 4 years.
Okay.
Right. And then from there.
How did you get in Germany? How do you go to Germany to perform? Did you audition here?
Yeah, in Toronto. So what happens is the Disney theatrical goes on like a world tour auditioning.
Yeah.
They don't just stay in one place or just stick to New York or even Canada. They go South Africa. They'll go Paris, France, wherever. And they'll do like a huge casting call, global casting call. And so they had stopped in Toronto. And my friend, Olinike Adili, she is now my mentor. And she was like, hey, there's an open casting call and you should come just check it out and see what happens. And I'm like, I don't know nothing about this stuff, but I'm gonna just make a fake resume, take a quick black and white headshot, because I think that's what actors do, and go on down to this audition and see what happens. Lo and behold, I got quite a few callbacks and met the head creative team. And from there, a couple months later, I got an agent at the time, and then got called to go to Germany and audition there. And then from there, that's when I booked it.
How do you... Like, did you sing before? Like, karaoke?
Sang in church.
Okay.
Sang in church. Yeah.
And after that, you weren't? You were just...
After school, I was like working in like auto insurance, like whatever. Cause that's the grown up thing to do is get a full time job.
Did you go to college school or?
Yeah, I went to York University here in Canada.
To study what? What did you study?
For sociology.
Sociology. Okay.
Yeah. Just something to do just to get out.
And you weren't taking singing lessons or anything?
No. No, I haven't taken any singing lessons. I wasn't going to any art school. It was literally just what I love doing in my spare time and a gift, I guess, that I was blessed with. And never thought that I would end up living my life.
Did you do karaoke?
Yeah, I love karaoke.
So would you be the person at karaoke that's singing and they're all like, you need to do this. Why aren't you doing this? Happen to you a bunch?
If they don't know me already or don't know my story, then yeah, they'll probably say like, girl. But most people I go to karaoke kind of know.
Well, but know I mean, before you were an actor.
Before. Okay. Yeah. 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 Okay. I mean, even before I used to sing in a little girl group, gospel group with my best friends. So we tour and go to the churches and have performances and stuff. So singing was a huge part of my life.
Okay.
Definitely. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So they end up in Germany and then you're in Broadway. So this wasn't a dream. This wasn't a lifelong dream of being on Broadway.
No. And I knew nothing about Broadway. Growing up, I didn't go to many plays or musical theater shows or anything like that. I just didn't really know much about that part of the industry. I knew, I watched movies and stuff, but I just never thought, oh, I want to be an actor. Right. I knew I was dancing a lot. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll be a dance teacher at my old dance studio. And that was kind of the plan. But God said, think bigger, honey, because we got more for you.
That's wild. And sometimes I'm like, why did I would tell my daughter wants to do this. Like, well, or like she wants to be
in
the industry. Right. And I'm like, yeah, because I got a theater degree and did the stuff. And I'm like, well, yeah, you can go the theater, but or you could just kind of try to go do it. You don't like there's you valid reasons on both arguments totally. On why.
But you really, you never know. Like, I never would have thought that this would have been my life. Had I not gone to that casting call, it probably never would have happened for me.
Yeah.
So if you truly believe that she has the talent and the skill to do it, I say, let her try and enjoy it and have fun.
Yeah.
And see, oh, yeah. No, see what takes her.
I'm like, it depends on the days that she gets me, whether I'm, I'm like, yes, well, whatever. I'm done.
Right.
Or like, okay, I'm gonna go to this little shoot tomorrow, whatever. So go ahead. Yeah, whatever. That's awesome. Chantel, the first time we have someone on the show here, mm-hmm. I don't know if you were warned about this. Or told about it. But we have seven specific questions that we ask everybody the first time they are on a show. It's Soslin and Stein's world famous seven questions. Okay.
Uh oh.
And it's
well, let's see if I answer them. I don't know.
Well, we'll see. Okay. Okay. Number one, what are you most nerdy about? And that doesn't mean
anime.
Okay. Okay. Yes. I was gonna say it doesn't have to be nerdy. Nerdy.
I guess some people anime? Consider it nerdy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so growing up, people would.
You deep dive into it? Like, what's your favorite?
Avid anime, manga watcher and reader.
Do you have a top one? The one that you wouldn't want to say, hey.
So I think
go check this
my
out.
My all time favorite for me will be Naruto, to be honest. I just love the characters and storytelling in there.
What's the name of it again?
Oh, Naruto.
Naruto. Okay.
Yes. Loving One Piece right now. Grew up watching Dragon Ball Z, Sailor Moon. Like, I could just sit there and watch it all day.
How did you get into it?
Honestly, Sailor Moon was my first anime. So I don't know, how old was I then? Like 8 or 9? And it was on a channel that we have here called YTV, which is the kids network.
Okay.
It was playing on there. And I was like, oh, what is this? You know, all the pretty girls and the pretty costumes and the bright colors. And then from there, my brother and I, we started watching like Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. And then
it happened to come across it one day.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you go to, have you ever been to a Comic-Con or a anime convention?
Not yet. I am dying to do an anime convention.
There's one in Seattle where I am every year, called Sakura Con. And I've never been, but I love it every year when it is, because I just love driving downtown when conventions like Sakura or Comic-Con are happening, because you see people in costume everywhere. And I don't know anime. And I don't ever want to know exactly, because the stories in my head from these costumes, I don't know if they can top it. What I was like, what if people are dressing like, I don't know what they are.
So,
let me make up a story.
There are some really creative people out there and have some incredible skill to put those costumes. Some of them build them themselves from scratch. So
I imagine Toronto must have a big one. Right?
Not that I know of, to be honest. Really? I know New York has a big one.
Okay.
So most, I guess, people come down from here to New York.
And don't feel, I always tell people for conventions, like, don't feel like you have to get dressed if it's not your thing, right?
No.
Just go experience it. Okay, yeah.
Absolutely.
So just go to that thing you love. Everyone should go to a convention that's about the thing they love, I feel like.
I agree.
Like, everyone should, if it's accountant, there should be an accounting con. Or whatever, go to it and enjoy it.
I will not be there.
I was disappointed to find out Dragon Con does not, there's no dragons. It has nothing to do with a dragon.
Surprise.
Yeah. So go figure. All right. Number two, what is something that you love to eat?
That I love to eat?
Yes. I know I covered this. Might have touched it earlier, but what's that love?
Oh, it's going to be Jamaican food.
Yeah. But what? Like, totally. What is it? Is it the
I could eat fried plantain every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
How do you fry it?
So we typically slice it long lengthwise into like thinner pieces. Some people do it like they chop it that way. So it's the round pieces.
Yeah.
But we slice it down so it's long and thin, throw it on the frying pan so it's nice and crispy, but still juicy. Oh my God. I oil? Eat that up with just
oil?
Yes.
Like
oil.
There's a little olive oil. Do you salt it or anything?
No,
or?
So it'd be like whatever your frying oil would be.
Okay.
Yeah. Do and just take it out, fry it on there, back in front for like 2, 3, 4 minutes. Have that with every meal. Every meal. Every day. Rest of my life. I'd be very happy.
Okay. Okay.
So happy.
Is that what do you do to someone? Someone says like, well, if someone calls plantain a banana, what do you like? What's your reaction?
I tell them it's not.
It's not.
And we don't say plantain. We say plantain.
Plantain. Plantain.
Yes.
Plantain.
Yes.
Is that,
it make how we say plantain. Some places say plantain or like, plantain. What are you talking about? Plantain. Yes.
Yes, man. What? Okay. Number three, what's something that you love to drink?
Apart from water?
Yeah. Could be water.
I love a good glass of Pinot Grigio.
Oh, okay.
White wine.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice white wine. Or just like a nice... Okay. I'll get a couple. So white wine.
Yeah.
Jamaican rum punch.
Yeah. Okay.
Or just a good old glass of lemonade.
Oh, my gosh. I do blame lemonade. I lost 50 pounds last year. Okay.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you.
That's great.
I will blame lemonade for a good 10 of those. Because especially during COVID, needing a comfort, I'm like, just give me a big jug of lemonade. I wish I could do a glass, right? I was like, too many
just the whole glasses. Jug.
Just like, yeah, cold lemonade on a hot day is one of the greatest things.
Love
so lemonade. Good. Okay. Number four, what kind of music do you love?
So my go-to is typically R&B. I love also listening to reggae, Afro beats. And I really like listening to like 1950s and 60s jazz and soul music.
Okay.
Yeah.
So artist wise, who pops up on like your Spotify right away? What are they suggesting?
So right now I'm loving SZA. Right now I'm loving Burna Boy. He's from Nigeria. Let's see, Jamaica Wise, Vybz Kartel, Oops, or Spice is good. And then like when I go to like the 1950s-ish side, I love listening to Dinah Washington.
Okay.
Yeah. So I listen to her. And I actually, you know, you go to Spotify, you choose like the radio. So I just put on Dinah Washington radio and just listen to all the artists that come through, like Louis Armstrong and all those guys that be coming up. So that's my go-to like just chill music or cleaning the house music even sometimes. I put that on.
You know, like a few years ago, actually way more than a few. Now that I say it out loud, I started listening to British soul music from even current stuff is like, because I was listening to some stuff and I was like, when's this from? What era is this song? And I was and I'm like, 2010? What is this?
Right,
and I went down a rabbit hole of British soul music because some of it sounds like it's from the 60s, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's just there. And I don't understand how the British got so soulful, particularly all the white folks. They're very, their music. I was like, amazing. Jamie Lydell. Yes. Jamie Lydell. I used to wake my daughter up one of his songs called Another Day. Another Day. It's one of my favorite songs that he sings.
Love Jamie that. Lydell. Oddly enough, though, my go-to playlist for the gym lately has been like rock music.
Yeah.
Either like 90s rock or even as far as like the Kiss era, like those guys. I would listen to that on that radio and just let it.
Yeah. I will listen to stuff at the gym. I will not listen anywhere else. Like,
yeah. Like that, I'm not listening to that at home.
Yeah. No, I'll like, sometimes I'm like, I need something new, and I put out a workout thing, and it's, and like, like We Will Rock You comes on, and yeah, I'm like, okay. Yeah, oh yeah, no, I can lift that.
We'll
like,
take it.
Like,
but yeah.
Yeah.
No, it just gives me a good pump. I can't lie.
Yeah. Okay. Number five, what is something you love? What do you love to create?
I, as of right now, I am really enjoying creating new show ideas, TV show ideas. I am stepping into the role of producer.
Okay.
In this point in my life, as well as actors. So just connecting with other creatives and, you know, just putting together new shows or new film ideas has been really exciting for me. So that, and also writing kids' books.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Kids so books. I have a kids' book right now that's called I Am, and it's a book of affirmations for children. It's an illustrated book, and currently working on, and that's everywhere. You can find it online, Amazon or Barnes and Nobles. And currently working on my second children's book right now.
So, I mean, as a woman of color, you clearly have an advantage stepping into television. What,
right.
Get off the
check mark.
What is there a, is it out of like the wanting to just create the stuff you want to be in, or is there a gap missing that you want to fill? Like, what is the desire to produce?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely obviously would love to do stuff that I would love to be in myself. But for me, it's just more storytelling, period. Especially when it comes to the Black community. Mm-hmm. So just tapping more into that, and being a woman from Toronto and just seeing like Toronto television, we could definitely afford a lot more Black stories up here. Yeah. Okay? It's kind of scanty. You know, we've had a great year last year with The Porter, and we've had Revenge of a Black Best Friend have all done incredibly well. We just had our Canadian Screen Awards, which is like our SAG Awards,
okay,
up here in Canada, and they swept, and it was just so beautiful to see. And it's like, you know what, if you guys just give us a chance, we can make beautiful work. And so I would love to just tap into that more and just give us more to relate to and to see more of ourselves on TV.
That's fascinating. Cause I was as you were saying that, I was realizing like I don't know how many shows that I know are filmed in Canada that I would, like I hadn't really thought about the lack of Black work in Canada.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, and I mean, that might show why I don't tend to think of a huge Black community in Canada. I mean, I don't go to Canada a lot. Certainly if I'm going to go to Vancouver, probably if I do right now. But
not a lot of Black people either.
Like, where would I watch? Like, where, I don't even know where I would see the stuff besides, like, you know, I know Netflix, I know, like, I caught Working Moms. I know that's a Canadian show that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
But if they weren't promoting it at the time, I don't know where I would catch it in the States. Like,
yeah, and that's something that I believe that we're working on a lot more over here when it comes to our Canadian content, is just letting the world know more about us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that will come with funding. If we get enough money, you're not going to hear, you know what I mean? You're going to keep hearing about us. But unfortunately, it is a little harder when it comes to that front. A few of our networks, like we have CBC Gem and we have Crave and all those things, and Bell TV, but a lot of those are only available within Canada. So even if you're in the States, you can't typically stream, because it's like, oh, you're not available in this region or something like that. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm sorry, do you want people to watch our stuff or... or not? So I don't know what the technical reason is behind that or why exactly that happens, but hopefully that will be changing soon so that everyone can hear and see the incredible talent that we have going on up here.
Do you find, if you do see Black shows on, if you see a show, Black show like Insecure, On HBO. Do you find it, I'm curious, as a Canadian, do you find that relatable being in LA? Does it, I don't know if the Canadian Black experience is different from the United States Black experience. Is that?
It's actually pretty similar.
Okay.
Obviously, like culturally, when it comes to LA culture, there's that I won't really be able to identify with. However, when it comes to the idea of what Insecure is, all in all, when it comes to like dating life and relationships, and even when it comes to like Molly's character and growing into the corporate ladder and like all that stuff as a Black woman, yeah, absolutely. We have definitely have relation to that and have some kind of understanding when it comes to that. So I thought Insecure was a genius show. I've watched it every week and loved every episode. And it was so inspiring to see Issa Rae just starting out in YouTube, and she was able to create this huge, you know what I mean, show and series with a huge network like HBO. And it gave, you know, new actors too, new comedians a chance to show themselves as well and how they've broken off and done their own things too and created their own projects. So
in the midst,
I would love to do something like that here.
Yeah. In the midst of Black Lives Matter's heights a few years ago, I would talk to people about, like, I would say you there's a lot of talk about wanting to support Black works and Black art. And there's a show called Insecure that's on right now that you're not watching, that one of the beauty is that they are just Black without it being about being Black and about,
right.
There's no, it's not, there's no trauma porn element to it. It's just them. Right. Being Black and living in the world. Yeah. And if you want to see what Black people are like, maybe outside of your space when you're not around, this is probably the closest you'll see, because they're just casually Black on it. Right. And it was a shame more people haven't seen that despite wanting to support Black works. As long as it's, you know, not easily available. Okay. All right, number six. What's a game you love to play?
That's a game I love to play. Like video game or just any
game? Could be any game. Not everyone's a video game person. A board game or a card game?
Love Monopoly, and I love Jenga.
Jenga?
Yeah. Jenga get very intense. I'm like, let me step forward for this, okay? Don't knock Jenga, because
I feel like Easter Bunny just brought my daughter a little Jenga set.
There you go. It can get really competitive.
Now I'm feeling like
your hands be sweating and that thing is shaking and you're like, Jesus Christ, help me.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the embarrassment of making this whole thing fall over.
I feel like there's a cookout version of Jenga that's different from.
Listen, Jenga can get really intense. It can get really intense. So
I love that. Okay, last question. Number seven. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Oh gosh. That I was giving. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in money or assets, but giving support, giving love, giving encouragement is something I would hope people remember me by.
That's wonderful.
I'm a huge advocate of hyping people up. I even recorded a meditation called Let Me Be Your Hype Man. It's available on Spotify. It's literally me talking for like 10 minutes, just hyping up how incredible you are. And there's something about me giving that to other people that actually energizes me. And so if there's one thing that people could say after I'm dead and gone, it's that, you know what, this girl really hyped me up and she really made me believe in myself. And yeah, I'm okay with that.
I love that. That is great. Chantel Riley, thank you so much for coming on. Your movie Colorblind is now it's available everywhere on demand.
It's available everywhere. So make sure you watch, stream, rent, share with everybody.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful story. And go on IMDb and give us 10 out of 10 stars.
Yeah, that's right. Right now. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Black and a Half.